The following program is sponsored by Senior Class Media. Welcome to Senior Class on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. You've graduated from the workforce and made it to retirement.
So go to the head of the class.
Senior Class Radio is your source for senior citizen-related topics, information, and entertainment. Now, it's time for Senior Class on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG.
And good Sunday morning, everybody. My name is Russell Mills, and this is Senior Class, where we discuss all aspects of life and living in your golden years and living with folks in their golden years. Your host for Senior Class is Mr. Rusty McMurray. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Senior Class. Thanks for waking up with us today. As always, we got a great show in store for you. We don't have Brittany Burge, my co-host, but we want to give a big shout out to her, Russell. She has just over a year old twins,
right,
that she has to take care of, along with a couple of older kids that are in grade school. And I can't see having four kids at home without having a sickness going around the circle almost all the time. So I feel for her. She was up all night with the twins.
And especially towards the beginning of the school year, where the kids go to the school and get, you know, and interact and play with all the other germy kids, and then they come home and the babies get sick, and I'm sure that, I mean, she works.
Those
little ones are probably, you know, going to a daycare or having, so yeah, that's a thing. So Brittany, we're thinking about you, kiddo. Hang in there.
Hang in there. Well, she's probably taking a quick nap before she has to get up and spend time with the kids again, but I want to welcome live to the studios, we have Tim Houchin, a local attorney. He's going to be taking questions and phone calls, and we're going to be talking about legal issues. I want to welcome him to the studios. Tim, thanks for waking up with us today.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
All right, before we get started, I want to tell everybody to go ahead and grab a pen and a paper. There will be questions from time to time that we might not be able to answer on the air, but you can talk to Tim one-on-one Monday morning. Tim, what's the phone number that people can reach you at during the week?
That's 918-599-8600.
All right, we're going to take callers today. So, Russell, what do folks need to do if they have a question for the attorney today?
Absolutely. If you have a question for Tim or for Rusty or even for me, I probably won't be all that helpful, but you can give us a call at 918-460-KRMG. That number again, 918-460-5764.
All right, we're going to get into issues, not really heavy and deep legal issues, but those things that happen day in and day out that you wish, hey, attorney, I could just pick up the phone and call and ask, but you don't want to spend $100. So we're going to cover all of those little things today, Tim, and I'm going to lead off with the first question. And from time to time, I do have the luxury and opportunity to work from home during the day. We do have offices, but I enjoy spending time at my own home, and there are people that work at night and stay at home during the day and sleep. We have some new neighbors, and they have a couple of yippy barking dogs that, no lie, are in the backyard for 6 hours straight, not just a bark every once in a while, but that annoying yip, 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 yip for 6 hours. Legally, is there anything that I can do? I love dogs. I have three dogs myself, but they're adequately trained. They only bark when there are people on the property. So is there anything legally you can do for those individuals that work from home or that work at that actually sleep at home during the day because they work at night?
Well, sadly, most sound ordinances only apply at night.
Oh. So,
unless it's a true nuisance, which is going to be really hard with just a dog barking, I hate to say there's not much to do during the day. People can play their music really loud or have dogs outside. Things like that are fine when the sun's up. Usually it's around 10 o'clock at night. Most towns and cities have
sound ordinances.
A time when you have to make things quiet, and that includes your dogs. If you have your dogs outside at night and they're still barking, you can get a ticket for that. But during the day, it gets really hard to monitor that stuff.
Oh, that's not what I wanted to hear.
One of our folks that I work with in the newsroom, there are two construction jobs going on in his neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And he said at 7 o'clock and 1 second,
they're on.
A.m.
Yes.
So I will tell you, the sound ordinance turns off at 7 a.m. in Tulsa. He said that, you know, the saws start, the hammers start, and there's not a bloody thing he can do about it.
And that's really hard for a lot of individuals, but the law is the law. So each and every city or municipality has their own sound ordinance.
Yeah, that's correct. Everybody has various zoning and sound ordinances. The only thing you might check would be some places have limits on how many dogs you can have. And if your neighbors have too many dogs, you can get them in trouble for that, for the sole purpose of the fact that they have more than they're allowed by the.
Well, I've gone to try to talk to them and during the barking time, and they're gone. So what they do is they put their dogs out when they go to work. The dogs are indoor dogs most of the time, so they yip for the 6 hours that the people are gone at work, and they come home and they let the dog back in, and they have no idea that the entire neighborhood is being bombarded with the poor yippy dog. So maybe I will try to find a way to befriend those dogs and make them feel more comfortable at home. We're taking your phone calls today. You're listening to Senior Class. We have Tim Houchin, local attorney, answering questions and taking your comments. So, Russell, what do folks need to do if they want to call in and ask the attorney a question?
Yeah, you can give us a call at 918-460-KRMG. That's 460-5764.
All right, Tim, so what is some of the most common questions you get from everyday individuals about legal issues?
I run into a lot of people talking to me about, in my practice, I tend to do a bunch of guardianship work, and I have a lot of questions about what guardianships are, what they cover, when you can and can't get guardianships. Sadly, a lot of times people want guardianships for the wrong reasons.
Exactly.
I've had people come to me and say, I want a guardianship because grandma's spending my inheritance. That's not a basis for a guardianship.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because in our field at Sunshine Care Partners, we deal with a lot of adult children who do have a medical proxy or a power of attorney. What's the difference between those documents and a true guardianship?
The issue is, if you grant somebody a medical proxy or power of attorney, they're very similar in the sense that someone else can speak for you.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is those work while you're still competent and able to speak for yourself, and at any point you can say, I take those back. You can stop those. Guardianships are where a court says you do not have the ability to make decisions for yourself anymore. We're going to appoint somebody to do that for you, and you cannot rescind that on your own. It's a court proceeding. It's much more complicated, and there's a lot more rules and things involved with that, but it is definitely a
situation would be where an individual was at risk in harming themselves, they have a mental deficiency from an illness or a stroke. In those instances, a guardianship would take place.
Yes. And you would you'd file an application with the court, and the judge would hear your testimony, and they frequently require, if not every time, require some kind of medical testimony or at least a letter from doctors saying that this is required. This person cannot manage their own affairs anymore. Man,
that would seem like a pretty painful process all the way around, not only for the individual fighting for the guardianship, but in a lot of instances, the individual doesn't want to give up those rights.
It can be. When someone is truly incapacitated, like in a coma or something like that, they're really simple. But there's always the people that are barely across that line, that are still aware, still
somewhat coherent,
trying to take care of their world, but for some reason are unable to do so. And those people, it is very difficult, and it's a very it feels hurtful to them that someone is taking away their rights and taking away their ability to make decisions, and they can't drive anymore, and they can't go to the bank or the doctor or anything like that on their own anymore. And that some people take that very, very strongly and fight back against that and it creates a lot of
tension between families.
Yes.
What are some of the ways that you can look ahead that when that issue does arise to where you're mentally incapacitated and can't really make those decisions for yourself, what are some of the ways that you can set up to avoid those pitfalls and pratfalls?
Well, that's where your durable power of attorney and medical proxies can really come in to play, because you can nominate the people that you want to take care of you, because the biggest issue is making sure that the person caring for you is going to do a good job and is going to think of your interests first. And so while you're competent, decide who you want that person to be and nominate them ahead of everybody else. That way, if there's ever a need for a guardianship, you've already decided who's going to be taking care of you. And so you can have a little more a sense of security and trust that the person, if they ever say that you need a guardianship, you've already told them it's okay, and you trust that they're going to take care of you properly.
All right, so in that situation, can you actually spell out some of your wishes to that potential guardian, or once you give away that guardianship, it's up to them and their forethought from that point forward?
You can give them some instructions, but at some point, once you reach under a complete guardianship level, it's their determination of what's in your best interest at that point.
So there's nothing legally binding, like if I wrote this out to my grandson, said, I want you to be my guardian, he's four now, so I'm thinking well, down the road.
Yeah, exactly.
But if I was to do that and I said, and by the way, you know, I don't want to be hooked up to machines, or I don't want, you know, this or that, or I don't want extraordinary measures taken if I have, you know, if I go unconscious. And I realize there are separate documents that sort of cover some of that, but does anything that I ask that potential legal guardian to do that's legally binding, or like you said, mm-hmm. can they just say
change his wishes down the road?
Well, what you just said was the advanced directive for healthcare. And if you do those things, those are legally binding. If you say, I don't want to be hooked onto machines, I don't want to be giving artificial nutrition and hydration, those things can be enforced against anybody trying to do those against your wishes. What I'm talking about is people say, I never want to go into a nursing home.
Okay.
And your guardian might say at some point, I can't care for them in their house anymore. They need to go into a nursing home. So if your mm-hmm. wish is that you never want to go into a nursing home, if it's their decision and it's in your best interest, they can still take that step.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're going to take a quick time out, and we will come back and speak more with attorney Tim Houchin. Remember, if you've got any questions, you can absolutely give us a call at 918-460-KRMG. I'll translate that for you. 460-5764 is the number. You're listening to Senior Class on News 102.3 KRMG. Welcome back to Senior Class on News 102.3 AM 740 KRM. Good morning, I'm Russell Mills. Coming up here in about 9 minutes, your top stories, the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center, and your forecast from Fox 23. Wish we had a little more sunshine to share with you, but that's okay. Pull over a warm radio. Sit down, and if you got any questions for us today, we're speaking with attorney Tim Houchin. He's here to answer your questions, and you can call us at 918-460-KRMG. That's 460-5764. If anything we're chatting about triggers a question in your mind. Meanwhile, our host for Senior Class is Mr. Rusty McMurray.
Good morning, Senior Class. Thanks for tuning in today. As always, a great show for you in store. Want to put a shout out to Brittany Burridge. She's unable to be in the studio taking care of her kids, so can't wait to see you next week. But we've got a great show going here. We're asking questions of the attorney that you might not normally ask an attorney, but we have one here in the studio today, so we're asking those strange and off-the-wall questions. And I've got one for you, Tim. Let's say, for example, you have a neighbor, and it goes back to neighbor issues. Not that we have neighbor issues. Tim and I are neighbors. We live in the same neighborhood.
Is that right?
But I'm making these stories up from individuals that I've heard and tell stories from time to time. And there was a huge water main break in an adjoining neighbor's yard. And to be able to get to the water main, they had to destroy property and land and fences all the way through other people's yards to get to the water main. And the city said, that's not our responsibility. And whose responsibility is that cleanup, the restoration, when an individual has a main break that has to go through your yard until it gets to the city main? Whose responsibility is that? Who pays for that?
Well, that's going to depend a lot on what caused the break. If it was an accidental break.
Or just old over time.
Just old things break like that and it happens to be on your property. Frequently, that falls under the property owner's responsibility. If you were digging in your yard and knocked a hole in it, clearly it's your responsibility.
Right.
If it was something that the city actually did wrong, which is incredibly hard to demonstrate.
Right.
With things like pipes and things like that. And they're going to deny it every time. They're going to say it's just your responsibility. It's almost always going to fall to the main property owner where the break occurred to try to make everybody happy and fix it.
Well, and that's what most everyone understands and realizes. However, the restoration to normal level from the pocketbook of the guy that's paying for it versus the guy that you've ruined my yard that it took me 20 years to be able to put together are never the same. What happens in those instances, or is that where small claims court comes into play?
That's the basis of our civil court system, is if you have a dispute that you cannot work out outside of a court and you can't make a decision and get along together long enough, then you ask judges and juries to make decisions for you.
Man, how hard is that? I've always wondered, you hear about people going to small claims court and winning those judgments, and that just scares me to go into a courtroom without having representation of an attorney. Can you bring an attorney? Do you, or is it just individual to individual with a judge in the middle, like the People's Court on television?
Small claims court is one of the amazing systems that we have set up here. If you have a claim that's less than $10,000, which is actually a fairly significant claim sometimes.
Oh, of course.
You can go to court and file a petition. The petition is fairly simple. The court clerks will, you can fill them out by hand. You don't have to type them up. Attorneys will frequently help you with these, but you don't have to have a counsel with you to go to small claims. The rules of evidence are very lax. You can talk about things hearsay. Everybody's heard that word hearsay. I can't say what someone else has said in court. Doesn't really apply in small claims.
Really?
The judge can hear. You can just stand there and tell your story. And then the other side gets to do the same thing. They stand up and they tell their story. And the judge will sit there and make a decision very quickly. And frequently, but from the time you file to the time you get your decision, can be less than a month.
And oh, my word.
It's a very rapid process. It's one of those times when the court system works the way it's supposed to. It's very quick. It's very easy to get in and out of, and you get your decision. Hopefully you prevail and you get what you want. But if you don't, at least you know where you stand, and it's resolved. That's the whole point of the system, is to resolve these disputes.
And in a lot of instances, before you get there, if you just have that conversation with your neighbor and you spell out in writing what's going to happen, it'll keep you from ending up in small claims court. And going back to the barking dog, take it upon myself to go over there in the evening and say, hey, well, you're at work all day. Did you know your poor dog number one and two, all they do is cry to get inside the house? And maybe things will change. Taking that proactive step on the front side eliminates a lot of problems and legal on the backside. Tim?
Anytime you can talk to somebody, if you think it's safe and it's able to, and you're able to do so, that's a great thing to try to do, to see if you can work things out yourselves. In addition, if you do file a small claims case, most of the time the judge will refer you to mediation right there. And they have mediators who appear at the small claims court who will take you off to the side and see if you can reach a resolution without the judge having to step in before you go have your hearing. And
now,
so
Tim,
they give you one last chance to try to fix it.
Exactly. And you've served as a mediator before.
Yes, yes.
So in those instances, what is the problem? Why are these people going head-to-head? Is it a disagreement? Is it perspective? And are you able to get them to resolve easily and quickly?
Many times the mediators are able to get people to see past the – a lot of times it's personal feelings. Somebody feels affronted. Somebody feels apologized to them. A lot of times what they're wanting to get is something you're not even going to get if you go to court. The judge is never going to tell someone to apologize to you.
Right.
They're just going to give you your judgment.
But a mediator, that can be a part of it.
Yeah, mediators can say, well, if you'll apologize and give them a little bit of money, we'll make this all go away. And so the mediation is a way to try to resolve things, sometimes with resolutions that go outside of what you could normally get in court.
I'm sorry, does the mediator get paid, like, by the court, by the two parties, by one of the parties? How does that work?
At the small claims level, the mediators are supplied by the court. They are there. They're volunteers. Usually they are working with the parties to try to resolve those issues. If you have a larger case, the parties will frequently pay for a mediator and then split that cost. It's a fairly minimal cost in the scheme of a litigation case, usually, and it's worth it to see if you can resolve your case. And mediators do, in my experience, most mediators do an amazing job of looking past the feelings, the emotions, and try to get people to see why they're really there and help them to get something out of it and find a resolution that works for everybody.
It's a psychological resolution versus a litigious resolution.
In many ways, yes, yes. Yeah.
So when you have two parties that are willing to enter mediation, can they be still represented by attorneys, and does that in any way complicate the process?
If you have a counsel, you always bring your counsel with you to mediation. Your attorney's going to be there to help explain the process and explain what you're agreeing to make sure you understand what you're actually saying yes to.
So they're an important part of the mediation process.
Yes. But they can. I've never really seen attorneys complicate things. Most attorneys are really there for you and trying to help you resolve your case. That's really their job. I know attorneys have a bad rap sometimes, but that's I've never seen an issue with attorneys causing problems in mediation.
Cool. And you said that in small claims court you don't have to have an attorney.
Nope.
You can appear what they call pro se, right?
Yes. In fact, a lot of cases in small claims are what we call pro se cases, where the parties are unrepresented.
Happens if you're the only one there and the person you're bickering with doesn't show up and you're the only one in front of the judge?
If they've been properly served. If you're the defendant and you get served, you show up and the plaintiff doesn't show up, they just throw the case out. If you're the plaintiff and you can prove that the other side's been served with your petition, then you get what's called a default judgment. The judgment will enter what you've asked for as a court order And at that point, you can go enforce your court order against them, whether it's a money judgment. You can have, you know, take it and try to get paid for that.
We're live here in the studios. You're listening to Senior Class Radio. I'm your host, Rusty McMurray. We have Tim Houchin, local attorney, taking your calls and questions. And Russell, if folks have a question for the attorney, what do they need to do?
Absolutely. Give us a call. Well, you can either explain your question to Mark and he'll happily send it along to me. Or if you'd like to be on the radio, feeling a little brave today, great. We'd love to talk with you. The number is 918-460-KRMG. That's 918-460-5764. Coming up on Senior Class, we'll have more questions for our special guest today, Attorney Tim Houchin, and hopefully hear from some of you about your questions. But first, we need to take a quick time out for the news and get the latest forecast from our friends at Fox 23. You're listening to Senior Class on News 102.3 KRMG. Welcome back to Senior Class on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. My name's Russell Mills. Remember, if you have questions for us today, you can give us a call at 918-460-KRMG. You don't even necessarily have to be on the radio, and we'll talk about that more here in a second. Your host for Senior Class is Mr. Rusty McMurray.
Good morning, Senior Class. Thanks for tuning in today. We have Tim Houchin, local attorney, answering questions for our listeners today, and we had a couple of people call in during the break. Tim, the first question was about patents, and just go over the breadth of patent law, and I didn't realize, except for during the break, those are two separate bar exams between a traditional lawyer and a patent attorney. Explain the differences.
Yes, most attorneys are not patent attorneys. It's a whole separate bar exam, It's a separate legal license, and I believe you have to be an engineer as well as an attorney to be a patent attorney. And so it's a very specific practice area. If you have questions about patents, you need to make sure that you find someone who is a patent attorney who knows exactly what they're doing, because it is very, very specific.
And you work with a couple of practices here in the local area that specialize in patent law. So will you give out your phone number today so for the individuals listening that have some questions about patent law can get with you and get those referrals Monday morning?
Sure. It's 918-599-8600.
That's 918-599-8600. And they just ask for you, Tim Houchin?
Yeah, if they'll just ask for me, then I can figure out exactly what they're looking for and get them referred to the right patent attorney.
All right. So in an individual, the same lady had a question on long-term care insurance policies. And I kind of know what those are. Those are policies really put in place to cover additional expenses that traditional health insurance doesn't cover. That means care in the home, an assisted living, or a nursing home. And those are great policies. They can seem somewhat expensive, and you have to buy them when you're healthy because you can't buy them after you're sick and in a nursing home. Do you see more and more people, Tim, utilizing these long-term care insurance policies to protect their assets?
Sadly, by the time they come talk to me, it's because they haven't gotten a long-term care insurance policy.
Exactly.
They really should have. It's usually when they're trying to protect their assets from being sold off to pay for their care because they didn't get one of those policies. And they're trying to keep their house, trying to keep some of their vehicle or something like that, because the way the standards are set up now, if you end up in a nursing home, your assets are used to pay for your care first.
Mm-hmm.
And so they want to access and sell off as much of that as possible. And people are frequently hoping that goes to their kids, or they want to keep stuff. And so it becomes very stressful and painful for them.
So the way to pay for those additional expenses, a nursing home, an assisted living, or care in your own home, if you don't want to utilize your own assets, is get that long-term care insurance policy. All right, we have a caller. We have Shelly. She has a question over divorce. Whoop. Looks like we lost Shelly.
Nope. I think she's there. Shelly,
there you go.
Thanks for calling Senior Class. What can we do for you today?
Well, I just have a question about alimony in the state of Oklahoma.
Yes.
I'm in a position that my husband made a lot more money than myself, a very long marriage. And during the separation, he's got a huge promotion, and he's making probably $30,000 more than he did after separation. Now, if I get alimony, would I be entitled to consider that extra $30,000 in court, or if his income during the marriage?
That's a really good question. And the issue here becomes for alimony, the standards are a lot of times the length of the marriage, the things that you would have acquired and expected during the marriage. And the two things they really look at are your need and his ability to pay. So his current raise and his current salary would be factored into his ability to pay. And so that's what the court's going to balance when they look at an alimony question. Do you have a need for alimony? And if you do, does he have the ability to pay the alimony? And so whether you were separated when he got this raise or not is not going to affect the question that the judge is going to look at as to his ability to pay.
Okay, so that is factored in, the raise.
It should be, yes.
Okay. And so even though I have a good job too.
You having a job on your own does not necessarily exclude you from having alimony. The question becomes how long you've been married, what you've had, what you've expected. If you have needs to pay your bills, even if you have income, if you have a need for some kind of alimony support and he has the ability to pay that support, those are the two factors that the judges are really going to look at in your divorce case.
Okay. And the second question is he has taken during the temporary order, this divorce has been going on for years. And he has went out and opened up LLCs. He has purchased properties and hid those under those LLCs. And I believe he's commingled funds of marital assets. What would be my best bet in separating that and trying to include that in as part of the marital asset?
Sure. It sounds like what he might have done, and there's a chance he might have violated the terms of the temporary order. There's some limitations on what you can and can't do on that, so you're going to have to have your attorney or go down and ask the judge to make a determination that he might have violated the terms of the temporary order. You may have to hire a forensic accountant to spend some time digging through those records and to split apart what's marital assets and what's might be separate assets that he acquired after your separation. And to, if you can't tell, they're likely going to be counted as marital assets if they're commingled, especially. Commingling tends to remove the separate quality of various assets. And so if he takes marital assets and puts them into an account or a company, he might have caused that company to now be considered a marital assets. And that's something you're going to have a forensic accountant dig through and help you with that.
So the debt that he's created, does that become, which is substantial, does that become a part of the liability that I have for repayment?
Generally, any debts incurred after separation are going to be separate debts.
Okay.
It's harder to commingle a debt than it is an asset. Okay. So he's going to have, he might try to impose that debt on you as a tactic in the divorce, but it's going to be harder for him to do that.
Shelley, thank you so much for calling. We really appreciate it. And thanks for listening to Senior Class. If you've got questions for us today for our attorney, Tim Houchin, you can give us a call at 918-460-KRMG. We've had a couple callers who didn't want to be on the air, but that's okay too. For instance, Al called, and Tim, he says he won a lawsuit. The defendant who lost that lawsuit is self-employed. He says, do you have any advice on collecting a judgment from somebody who's self-employed?
That's a great question.
That's a really good question. It becomes very difficult. People win judgments all the time, and they think they've got an asset. And the judgment itself is only worth what you can collect from the people who have a judgment against. Sometimes the judgments aren't worth very much. Someone who's self-employed, you tend to have to sometimes get the court's help in going after the physical assets of what they have. Especially if they're
like a lien against a house,
lien against houses or company cars or individual car or things like that, so that you can begin to collect on things. You might have to bring them in for what's called an asset hearing, and that's where you sit them down and under oath you get to ask them almost anything you want to about their assets. You can dig through. You can take if they have jewelry on that's not a wedding ring. You can take that. It's really kind of aggressive, but in that you can find out where they have bank accounts. And then you can send a garnishment straight to that bank account.
And this is after you've already had a judgment.
Once you have a judgment, you can't do this pre-judgment. But if you have a judgment, you can conduct an asset hearing and then begin to find out where he might have some assets that you can use to satisfy that judgment.
All right, Al, hope that answers your question. Rusty?
Do we want to go ahead and take a break now so we can get to the callers post-break?
I don't have any kind of problem with that. So we'll take a quick time out, take a breather, take a look at the radar, see if anything else is moving in. And I'm going to tell you, yeah, probably going to be some more rain today, but we'll let our friends at Fox 23 give you the details on that at the top of the hour. Meanwhile, you're listening to Senior Class on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. We could use a little more sunshine in green country today. Not going to happen. We do have some rain moving in from the southwest, so do take care. Make sure you got your headlights on when you're driving around there today, going back and forth from church or what have you. Welcome back to Senior Class on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. I'm Russell Mills. Coming up in about 10 minutes, your top stories in the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center and all the details on your most accurate and dependable five-day forecast. And after the news, we've got Living Well with Dr. Booz. If you got questions for us, give us a call, 918-460-KRMG. That's 460-5764. Our special guest is Attorney Tim Houchin. Your host for Senior Class is Mr. Rusty McMurray.
Good morning, Senior Class. Thanks for tuning in to our show. As always, we have a great show in store for you. We have a little bit of time left before the top of the hour when we'll get to a few questions. Now, Tim, you are a broad-range attorney, but your specialty really lies in counseling, mediation. Tell us a little bit about your background. You have your master's in counseling in addition to your JD. Is that correct?
Yeah, I went to the University of Oklahoma and got my master's degree in counseling and was a children and family therapist for about 5 years before I decided to go to law school. And so I kind of mixed those two careers, and being a counselor actually is a great help when I'm in the practice of law.
Well, it really is, because you're able to see perspective from both. You have your master's degree in that counseling and you served in the field. So you worked with families day in and day out through some of the most difficult situations, and you bring a lot to being an attorney.
And this helps me with civil practice and dealing with picking juries and dealing with my clients, and any kind, even just business litigation can be very stressful. And so talking them through those things is one of those things I rely on. Sometimes I play therapist as much as I play attorney.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we were talking a little
That's
bit.
That's why they call it counselor.
Right. Well, and you're a counselor and a counselor.
Yes.
So there you go. We were talking a little bit during the break about how an attorney's just not an attorney anymore. Just the way that a doctor is not just a doctor. I mean, there's primary care physicians, and then there's, you know, oncologists, and there's specialists in every field. And that is the way the law field has gone too.
Yeah, the law has become very complex over the years, and it is very difficult to have a general practice attorney who does everything anymore. There are some people who still try to do that, especially in smaller towns, and they do the best they can. But if possible, there are attorneys who specialize in various things, specialize in civil litigation, specialize in criminal litigation, specialize in trusts and estate planning, and they have created these niche areas where that's what they focus on, and they become experts in those areas.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that until I was calling around to some of the other attorneys that I know personally to invite the show, and they were like, I don't do that. Or it's like, I don't talk about that. That's not my area of expertise in the law. And I'm like, goodness gracious, I thought just like being a doctor's a doctor, but even nowadays, a doctor's not a doctor. There's a general practitioner, but you have a plethora of specialists from a podiatrist to your endocrinologist that you deal with on a daily basis. And it sounds like it's the same in the legal field.
It's very much. Just like you wouldn't want your head surgeon working on your feet, you don't want the podiatrist
doing brain surgery.
Yes. You want an attorney who has some specialization or at least some specific knowledge on the areas that you want to work on. There's domestic attorneys who work on family issues. There's corporate attorneys who deal with corporate issues. And so sometimes those you need to find someone who really knows what you're working on with you.
All right. So I've got to ask this. How are you handling as an attorney the unknown of medical cannabis? I mean, it would seem to be tough to me to go into an arena with so many unknowns and be able to give good legal advice. Are you working with companies and businesses on this burgeoning Oklahoma, golly, business opportunity, I guess you could say?
Industry. There is a new industry growing, sprouting, if you will, in Oklahoma. And absolutely,
no,
there's
going to
be attorneys involved.
So how are you
already working? Have been several attorneys involved for various reasons. Yeah. So what is your involvement?
Oh, so far, what I'm trying to do is stay on top of all the changes because this issue is very rapid and is still up in the air in some ways as far as what the final rules and regulations are going to look like. And so staying on top of that is part of my job. I have helped several people set up companies and LLCs in anticipation of opening either dispensaries or growing operations. Those companies can be set up the same way regular companies are set up. And so I've helped them with that part. And then now I'm working with them on the regulations on their actual operations and their licensing requirements and things like that.
Kind of a moving target right now.
Very much so.
Because the state, well, I mean, the OMMA has issued its general, that's the Oklahoma Medical Marijuana Authority, has issued its general, you know, rules. Okay, that's great. Legislature convenes in February. We have no idea what's going to happen there. And then you've got every single municipality in the state of Oklahoma that's dealing with this at one level or another.
I know, and it can be confusing. I'm starting to see signs of buildings coming soon, dispensary all around town, and I'm wondering, how are they making it through the legal mess? So there's attorneys just like you that are trying to stay on top of it?
And we are trying to keep our heads above everything as much as possible and see what it does exist and try to predict, and if possible, what may be coming up the line. One of the issues I've seen recently was people were talking about zoning. Right. And a lot of the cities haven't even addressed zoning yet on where dispensaries can be and where growing operations can be located.
Did we put the cart before the horse on this whole medical cannabis thing here in the state of Oklahoma?
Not necessarily. I think they're just trying. These are just the growing pains of any new industry, and it's such a big change. There are a lot of people who are looking to other states who have medical marijuana already in existence and trying to learn from their mistakes. But it's still a very rapid process, the way they've tried to put this in place, and we're just trying to keep up with it.
And we are definitely not the first. We are the 31st.
Yes.
And so, you know, there are examples to look at, and you're right. They're trying to figure out, you know, what went right, what went wrong. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of interesting the way State Question 788 was written. Deliberately, pretty broad strokes. They left a lot of room there for, you know, interpretation and for implementation in a unique way that they hope will best suit the needs of the patients as well as the general public here in Oklahoma.
I'm just hoping that the money that's raised through this is spent adequately and has been targeted. And that's the big unknown. I don't think anybody's really talking about how much money this could raise for the state and where those resources are going, because we're talking in the bees. I mean, Colorado had billions of dollars of extra revenue into the state coffers, and that's a lot of money to go untagged with regards to how it's going to be spent. Tim, do you have any foresight on how the money's going to be spent at the state level, or are you just trying to keep up with the state agencies?
Mostly just with the operation side right now, but I'm hoping that some of this is going to go into education, but you can never predict once it lands.
I believe some of it is earmarked for education, but you know, we don't know. And again, the legislature will have its say. There was a lot of talk about the governor or the legislature calling a special session.
Didn't happen.
There were some senators who wanted to wait. I've been told by several sources at the Capitol that, you know, that was the roadblock, that there was enough House members that were willing to go for it. But I believe it takes a 2/3 majority to call for a special session if the governor doesn't do it.
Well, we need some guidance and direction, because I'm in the medical field and the doctors are all wondering, what direction will this take? How can I participate? Should I participate? And is this just a whole guise for recreational marijuana wrapped in a medical marijuana wrapper?
Which is a great question, but I'll tell you the same thing I've told many people, which is recreational marijuana is here. It's just not legal and it's just not taxed. But trust me, in Oklahoma.
I think it's been since like the late 60s.
Right. Well, longer than that. But I will say this. A lot of people that are medical cannabis advocates are about patients.
Oh,
they're
I
about am. The people who want this, that this is a medicine that people want and need. And that kind of gets lost in all the talk.
I know.
About
I firmly believe if we can get adequate research, we will show that the cannabis is a substitute and alternative for opioids.
And a lot of research pointing that direction. All right. You've been listening to Senior Class. We're live and local here from 8 to 9 a.m. every Sunday. Up next, your top stories, the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center and that soggy forecast. I'm Russell Mills. We'll see you here again next week for Senior Class.
You've been listening to Senior Class Radio with host Rusty McMurray.
Thanks for listening.
Tune into Senior Class Radio with Rusty McMurray every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. right here on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. Until next time, have a great weekend. God bless.